The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandigedra Devalagam.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Ekaṃ santaṃ ekaṃ paṇitaṃ yadidaṃ sabba saṅkhāra samatho sabbūpadhipati nissaggo tanhakkhayo virāgo nirodho nibbāna. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 27th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. In our last sermon, we brought up some similes and illustrations to explain why the sadness of the Tathagata has been given special emphasis in the Kalakārama Sutta. Drawing inspiration from the Buddha's sermon, comparing consciousness to a magic show, we made an attempt to discover the secrets of a modern-day magic show from a hidden corner of the stage. The parable of the magic show revealed to us the fact that the direct and the indirect formulation of the law of dependent arising, known as tatata, suchness, or idapachyata, specific conditionality, is similar to witnessing a magic show from two different points of view. That is to say, the deluded point of view of the spectator in the audience and the discerning point of view of the wisdom-eyed critic hidden in a corner of the stage. The reason for the riddle-like outward appearance of the Kalakārama Sutta is the problem of resolving the conflict between these two points of view. However, the fact that the Tathagata resolved this conflict at a supramundane level and enjoyed the bliss of emancipation comes to light in the first three discourses of the Bodhivagga in the Udana. These three discourses tell us that after the attainment of enlightenment, the Buddha spent the first week in the same seated posture under the Bodhi tree, and that on the last night of the week he reflected on the law of dependent arising in the direct order in the first watch of the night, in the reverse order in the second watch, and both in direct and reverse order in the last watch. These last mentioned reflection, both in direct and reverse order, is like a compromise between the deluded point of view and the discerning point of view mentioned above. Now, in a magic show, to see how the magic is performed is to get disenchanted with it, to make it fade away and cease, to free the mind from its spell. By seeing how a magician performs, one gets disgusted with what he performs. Similarly, seeing the arising of the six bases of sense contact is the way to get disenchanted with them, to make them fade away and cease, to transcend them and be emancipated. We come across two highly significant verses in the Sona Sutta among the sixes of the Anguttara Nikaya with reference to the emancipation of the mind of an arahant. Nekhammang adhimuttasya pavivekancha chetaso Abhyapajhadhimuttasya upadanakhyasya ca tannakhyadhimuttasya asammohancha chetaso දිස්වා ආයතන උපාදං සම්මා චිත්තං විමුච්චති. The mind of one who is fully attuned to renunciation and mental solitude, who is inclined towards harmlessness, ending of grasping, extirpation of craving, and non-delusion of mind, on seeing the arising of sense bases, is fully emancipated. To see how the sense bases arise is to be released in mind. Accordingly, we can understand how the magic consciousness of one who is enjoying a magic show comes to cease by comprehending it. Magic consciousness subsides. In other words, it is transformed into a non-manifestative consciousness, which no longer displays any magic. That is the mental transformation that occurred in the man who watched the magic show from a hidden corner of the stage. This gives us a clue to the cessation of consciousness in the Arahant and the consequent non-manifestative consciousness attributed to him. The Dvaitanupassana Sutta of the Sutta Nipata also bears testimony to this fact. The title itself testifies to the question of duality forming the theme of this discourse. Throughout the Sutta, we find a refrain-like distinction between the arising and the ceasing of various phenomena. It is like an illustration of the two aspects of the problem that confronted the Buddha. Now that we are concerned with the question of the cessation of consciousness, let us quote the relevant couplet of verses. Yam kinchi dukkham sambhoti sabbam vijnana paccaya vijnanasya nirodhena nathi dukkhasya sambhava etang adinavam jnatva dukkham vijnana paccaya vijnanupasama bhikkhu nicchato parinibbana. Whatever suffering that arises, all that is due to consciousness. With the cessation of consciousness, there is no arising of suffering. Knowing this peril, this suffering dependent on consciousness, by calming down consciousness, the monk is hungerless and fully appeased. The comparison between the magic show and consciousness becomes more meaningful in the context of this discourse. As in the case of a magic show, the delusory character of the magic of consciousness is traceable to the perception of form. It is the perception of form which gives rise to the host of reckonings through cravings, conceits, and views which bring about a delusion. Therefore, a monk intent on attaining Nibbana has to get rid of this magical spell of the perception of form. The verse we cited from the Kalahavivada Sutta the other day has an allusion to this requirement. That verse, beginning with the words Nasanya Sanyi, is an attempt to answer the question raised in a previous verse in that sutta, posing the query Katham Sametasya Vibhoti Rupa. To one constituted in which manner does form cease to exist? Let us remind ourselves of that verse. Na sanya sanyi, na visanya sanyi, no piya sanyi, na vibhuta sanyi, evang samitasya vibhuti rupang, sanya nidana hi papancha sankha. He is not conscious of normal perception, nor is he unconscious. He is not devoid of perception, nor has he resigned at perception. It is to one thus constituted that form ceases to exist, for reckonings through prolificity have perception as their source. Here the last line states a crucial fact. Reckonings, designations and the like, born of prolificity, are traceable to perception in the last analysis. That is to say, all that is due to perception. Another reason why form has received special attention here is the fact that it is a precondition for contact. When there is form, there is the notion of resistance. That is already implicit in the question that comes in a verse at the beginning of the Kalahavivada Sutta. Tismin vibhute na pusanti pasa. When what is not there, do touches not touch? The answer to that query is, Rupe vibhute na pusanti pasa. When form is not there, touches do not touch. We come across a phrase relevant to this point in the Sangeeti Sutta of the Digginikar. That is, Sanidassana Sappati Ghankrupa. Materiality, according to this phrase, has two characteristics. It has the quality of manifesting itself, Sanidassana. It also offers resistance, Sappati Ghankrupa. Both these aspects are hinted at in a verse from the Jata Sutta we had quoted at the very beginning of this series of sermons. Prathanamanche rupanche asesang uparujyati patighang rupa sanya che ettasa chidyati jata. The Jata Sutta tells us the place where the tangle within and the tangle without, anto jata bhajata, of this gigantic samsaric puzzle is solved. And here is the answer. Wherein name and form, as well as resistance and the perception of form, are completely cut off, it is there that the tangle gets snapped. The phrase patighang rupa sanya che is particularly significant. Not only the term patigha implying resistance, but also the term rupa sanya deserves our attention, as it is suggestive of the connection between form and perception. It is perception that brings an image of form. Perception is the source of various reckonings and designations. The term sanya has connotations of a mark, a sign, or a token, as we have already pointed out. It is as if a party going through a forest is blazing a trail for their return by marking notches on the trees with an axe. The notion of permanence is therefore implicit in the term sanya. So it is this sanya that gives rise to papancha sankha, reckonings through prolificity. The compound term papancha sanya sankha, occurring in the Madhupindika Sutta, is suggestive of this connection between sanya and sankha. Reckonings, definitions and designations arising from prolific perception are collectively termed papancha sanya sankha. The significance attached to sanya could easily be guessed by the following dictum in the Guhattaka Sutta of the Sutta Nipata. Sanyang parinya vitare yogam. Comprehend perception and cross the flag. Full comprehension of the nature of perception enables one to cross the four great floods of defilements in samsara. In other words, the penetrative understanding of perception is the way to deliverance. Let us now go a little deeper into the connotations of the term sanya. In the sense of sign or token, it has to have something to signify or symbolize. Otherwise, there is no possibility of designation. The sign can be significant only if there is something to signify. This is a statement that might need a lot of reflection before it is granted. A sign, properly so called, is something that signifies. And when there is nothing to signify, it ceases to be a sign. So also is the case with the symbol. This is a norm which is well explained in the Mahavedala Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya. In the course of a dialogue between Venerable Mahakottita and Venerable Sariputta, we find in that sutta the following pronouncement made by Venerable Sariputta. Rāgo kho āvaso kinchano, dōso kinchano, moho kinchano, tekhena savasa bhikkhuno pahina, ucchena mūla, tālāvattukata, anubhāvakata, āyatin anuppāda dhamma. Lust, friend, is something. Hate is something. Delusion is something. They have been abandoned in an influx-free muck. Uprooted. made like a palm tree deprived of its sight, made extinct and rendered incapable of sprouting again. So lust is a something, hate is a something, delusion is a something. Now a sign is significant and a symbol is symbolic only when there is something. Another statement that occurs a little later in that dialogue offers us a clarification. Rāgo kvāuso nimitta karano, dōso nimitta karano, mōho nimitta karano. Lust, friend, is significant. Hate is significant. Delusion is significant. Now we can well infer that it is only so long as there are things like lust, hate and delusion that signs are significant. In other words, why the Tathagata declared that there is no essence in the magic show of consciousness is because there is nothing in him that signs or symbols can signify or symbolize. What are these things? Lust, hate and delusion. That is why the term akinchana, literally thingless, is an epithet for the Arhant. He is thingless not because he no longer has the worldly possessions of a layman, but because the aforesaid things, lust, hate and delusion, are extinct in him. For the Tathagata, the magic show of consciousness has nothing substantial in him, because there is nothing in him to make the signs significant. That man with discernment who watched the magic show from a hidden corner of the stage found it to be hollow and meaningless, since he had, in a limited and relative sense, got rid of attachment, aversion and delusion. That is to say, after discovering the tricks of the magician, he lost the earlier impulses to laugh, cry and fear. Now he has no curiosity, since the delusion is no more. At least temporarily, ignorance has gone down in the light of understanding. According to this norm, we can infer that signs become significant due to greed, hate and delusion in our own minds. Perceptions pander to these emotive tendencies. In the concluding verse of the Magandhya Sutta of the Sutta Nipata is particularly important. In that it sums up the Arahant's detachment regarding perceptions and his release through wisdom. Sanya virattasena santi gantha, panya vimuttasena santi moha, sanyanca dittinca ye aggahesum, te ghattayanta vitaranti loki. To one detached from percepts, there are no bonds. To one released through wisdom, there are no delusions. Those who hold on to percepts and gifts go about wrangling in this world. It is the state of detachment from perceptions and release through wisdom that is summed up by the phrase anasamam cheto vimuttim panya vimuttim in some discourses. With reference to the Arahant, it is said that he has realized by himself through higher knowledge in this very life that influx-free deliverance of the mind and deliverance through wisdom. Anasaman cheto vimuttim, panya vimuttim, ditteva dhammi sayam abhinya satyat. So we could well infer that the Arahant is free from the enticing bonds of perceptions and the deceptive tricks of consciousness. It is this unshakable stability that finds expression in the epithets anejo, immovable, and tito, stable, used with reference to the Arahant. The Anindya Sappaya Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya opens with the following exhortation by the Buddha. Anicca bhikkave kama, tuccha, musa, mosa dhamma, maya katametam bhikkave, bala lapanam, yecha ditta dhammika kama, yecha samparayika kama, yecha ditta dhammika kama sanya, yacha samprayika kama sanya ubhayametam maradheyam marasesa visiyo marasesa nivapo marasesa gocha. Impermanent monks are sense pleasures. They are empty, false, and deceptive by nature. They are conjurers, tricks, monks, tricks that make fools prattle. Whatever pleasures there are in this world, whatever pleasures that are in the other world, whatever pleasurable pursuits there are in this world, whatever pleasurable pursuits that are in the other world, they all are within the realm of Mara. They are the domain of Mara, the bait of Mara, the beat of Mara. This exhortation accords well with what was said above regarding the magic show. It clearly gives the impression that there is the possibility of attaining a state of mind in which those signs are no longer significant. The comparison of consciousness to a magic show has deeper implications. The insinuation is that one has to comprehend perception for what it is in order to become dispassionate towards it. Sanyam parinya vitare yoga. Comprehend perception and cross the front. When perception is understood inside out, disenchantment sets in as a matter of course, since delusion is no more. Three kinds of deliverances are mentioned in connection with the Arahants, namely Animitta, the soundless, Appanihita, the undirected, and Sunyata, the void. He spoke of signs being significant. Now, where there is no signification, when one does not give any significance to signs, one does not direct one's mind to anything. Panidhi means direction of the mind and aspiration. In the absence of any aspiration, there is nothing essential in existence. There is a certain interconnection between the three deliverances. Animitta, the signless, is that stage in which the mind refuses to take a sign or catch a theme in anything. Where lust, hate and delusion are not there to give any significance, signs become ineffective. That is the signless. Where there is no tendency to take in signs, there is no aspiration, expectation or direction of mind. It is as if dejection in regard to the magic show has given rise to disenchantment and dispassion. When the mind is not directed to the magic show, it ceases to exist. It is only when the mind is continually there, directed towards the magic show or film show, that they exist for a spectator. One finds oneself born into a world of magic only when one sees something substantial in it. Magic world is made up only when there is an incentive to exist in it. Deeper reflection on this simile of the magic show would fully expose the interior of the magical illusion of consciousness. Where there is no grasping at signs, there is no direction or expectation, in the absence of which existence ceases to appear substantial. That is why the three terms signless, animitta, undirected, apanihita and void, sunyata, are used with reference to an arhat. These three terms come up in a different guise in a discourse on Nibbana we had discussed earlier. There they occur as appatitthaṃ, appavattaṃ and anārammaṇaṃ. Appatitthaṃ means unestablished. Mind gets established when there is desire or aspiration, panidhi. Contemplation on the suffering aspect, dukkhānupassana, eliminates desire. So the mind is unestablished. Contemplation on not-self, anattānupassana, does away with the notion of substantiality, seeing nothing pithy or essential in existence. Pith is something that endures. A tree that has pith has something durable, though its leaves may drop off. Such notions of durability lose their hold on the arahant's mind. The contemplation of impermanence, anicca-anupassana, ushers in the signless, animitta state of the mind that takes no object. anaramana. The simile of the magic show throws light on all these aspects of deluvance. Owing to this detachment from perception, sanya virakta, and release through wisdom, panya vimutta, an arahant's point of view is totally different from the worldling's point of view. What appears as real for the worldling is unreal in the estimation of the arahant. There is such a wide gap between the two viewpoints. This fact comes to light in the two kinds of reflections mentioned in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta of the Suttanipata. යම් භික්කවේ සදේවකස්ස ලෝකස්ස සම්මාරකස්ස සබ්‍රහ්මකස්ස සස්සමන බ්‍රාහ්මණිය පජාය සදේව මනුස්සාය ඉදං සච්ඡන්ති උපනිච්ඡායිත තදං අරියාණං ඊතං මුසාති යථා භූතං සම්මප්පඤ්ඤාය සුදිත අයං ඒකානුපස්ස යම් භික්කවේ සදේවකස්ස ලෝකස්ස සම්මාරකස්ස සබ්‍රහ්මකස්ස සස්සමන බ්‍රාහ්මණිය පජාය සදේව මනුස්සාය ඉදං මුසාති උපනිච්ඡායිතං තං අරියාණං ඒතං සච්ඡන්ති යථා භූතං සම්මප්පඤ්ඤාය සුදිට්ඨ අයං ဒုတိယපස monks whatsoever in the world with its gods maras and brahmas among the progeny consisting of recluses brahmins gods and men whatsoever is pondered over as truth that by the aryans has been well discerned with right wisdom as it is as untrue. This is one mode of reflection. Amongst whatsoever in the world with its gods, maras and brahmas, among the progeny consisting of recluses, brahmins, gods and men, whatsoever is pondered over as untruth, that by the aryans has been well discerned with right wisdom as it is as truth. This is the second mode of truth. From this, one can well imagine what a great difference, what a contrast exists between the two standpoints. The same idea is expressed in the verses that follow, some of which we had cited earlier too. Anattani attamani pasalokam sadevakam nivittam namarupasmin idam satchanti manyati. Yena yena hi manyanti tato tang hoti anyatha. Tang hitasa musa hoti mosa dhamman hi itra. Amosa dhamman nibbanam tadariya satchato vidu. Teve satcha bhisamaya nichhata parinibhuta. Just see the world with all its gods, fancying a self where none exists. Entrenched in name and form, it holds the conceit that this is real. In whatever way they imagine, thereby it turns otherwise, that itself is the falsity of this puerile, deceptive thing. Nibbana is unfalsifying in its nature, that they understood as the truth, and indeed by the higher understanding of that truth, they have become hungerless and fully appeased. Let us go for a homely illustration to familiarize ourselves with the facts we have related so far. Two friends are seen drawing something together on a board with two kinds of paints. Let us have a closer look. They are painting a chessboard. Now the board is checkered. Some throwaway chunks of wood are also painted for the pieces. So the board and pieces are ready. Though they are the best of friends and amicably painted the chess board, the game of chess demands two sides, the principle of duality. They give in to the demand and confront each other in a playful mood, a hazy idea of victory and defeat. Another duality hovers above them, but they are playing the game just for fun, to while away the time. Though it is for fun, there is a competition. Though there is a competition, it is fun. While the chess game is in progress, a happy-go-lucky benefactor comes by and offers a handsome prize for the prospective winner. to anyone again. From now onwards, it is not just for fun or to while away the time that the two friends are playing chess. Now that the prospect of a prize has aroused greed in them, the innocuous game becomes a tussle for a prize. Worthless pieces dazzle with the prospect of a prize. But just then, there comes a pervert killjoy who shows a threatening weapon and adds a new rule to the game. The winner will get the prize all right, but the loser he will kill with his deadly weapon. So what is the position now? The sportive spirit is gone. It is now a struggle for dear life. The two friends are now eyeing each other. The two friends are now eyeing each other as an enemy. It is no longer a game, but a miserable struggle to escape death. We do not know how exactly that game ended, but let us hold the post-mortem all the same. We saw how those worthless chunks of wood picked up to serve as pieces on the chessboard received special recognition once they took on the paint. They represented two sides. With the prospect of a prize, they got animated in the course of the game due to cravings, conceits, and whims in the minds of the two players. Those impulses were so overwhelming that especially after the death knell sounded, the whole chessboard became the world for these two friends. Their entire attention was on the board, a life and death struggle. But this is only one aspect of our illustration. The world, in fact, is a chessboard, where an unending chess game goes on. Let us look at the other aspect. Now for the Arahant. The whole world appears like a chessboard. That is why the Arahant Adimutta, when the bandits caught him while passing through a forest and got ready to kill him, uttered the following instructive verse, which we had quoted earlier too. Tina katta samang lokam yada panyaya pasati mamattang so asangindang natthi meti nasuchati. When one sees with wisdom this world as comparable to grass and twigs, not finding anything worthwhile holding on to his mind, one does not grieve, saying, "Oh, I have nothing." Venerable Adimutta's fearless challenge to the bandit chief was extraordinary. "You may kill me if you like, but the position is this. When one sees with wisdom the entire world, the world of the five aggregates, as comparable to grass and twigs, one does not experience any egoism, and therefore does not grieve the loss of one's life." Some verses uttered by the Buddha deepen our understanding of the Arahant's standpoint. The following verse of the Dhammapada, for instance, highlights the conflict between victory and defeat. Jayang verang pasavati dukhang seti parajito upasanto sukhang seti hitva jaya paraja. Victory breeds hatred. In sorrow lies the defeated. The one serene is ever at peace, giving up victory and defeat. As in the chess game, the idea of winning gives rise to hatred. The loser in the game has sorrow as his lot. But the Arahant is at peace, having given up victory and defeat. Isn't it enough for him to give up victory? Why is it said that he gives up both victory and defeat? These two go as a pair. This recognition of duality is a distinctive feature of this Dhamma. It gives in a nutshell the essence of this Dhamma. The idea of a duality is traceable to the vortex between consciousness and name and form. The same idea comes up in the following verse of the Akkadanda Sutta in the Sutta Nipata. Yasya nathi idam meti pare sangvapi kinchanam mamattang so asangindam nathi meti na sochati. He who has nothing to call this is mine, not even something to recognize as theirs, finding no egoism within himself, he grieves not, crying, "Oh, I have nothing." So far in this series of sermons on Nibbana, we were trying to explain what sort of a state Nibbana is. We had to do so because there has been quite a lot of confusion and controversy regarding Nibbana as the aim of the spiritual endeavor in Buddhism. The situation today is no better. Many of those who aspire to Nibbana today aim not at the cessation of existence, but at some form of quasi-existence as a surrogate Nibbana. If the aiming is wrong, will the arrow reach the target? Our attempt so far has been to clarify and highlight this target, which we call Nibbana. If we have been successful in this attempt, the task before us now is to adumbrate the salient features of the path of practice. Up to now, we have been administering a purgative to dispel some deep-rooted wrong notions. If it has worked, it is time now for the elixir. In the foregoing sermons, we had occasion to bring up a number of key terms in the suttas, which have been more or less relegated into the limbo and rarely come up in serious Dhamma discussions. We have highlighted such terms as sunyata, dvaita, tatata, atamyata, idappacceta, papancha and manyana. We have also discussed some aspects of their significance. But in doing so, our main concern was the dispelling of some misconceptions about Nibbana as the God. The aim of this series of sermons, however, is not the satisfying of some curiosity at an academic level. It is to pave the way for an attainment of this God by rediscovering the intrinsic qualities of this Dhamma that is well proclaimed, Svakkhato, visible here and now, Sandhittiko, timeless, Akaliko, inviting one to come and see, Ehipassiko, leading one onwards, Upanayiko, and realizable personally by the wise, Pachattang Veditabbo Vinyo. So the few sermons that will follow might well be an elixir to the minds of those meditators striving hard day and night to realize Nibbana. Lobho doso cha moho cha purisam papa chetasam hingsanti atta sambhuta tachasaram vasam phalam. Greed and hate and delusion too sprung from within work harm on him of evil wit, as death its fruit on the reed for which the bark is picked. The main idea behind this verse is that the three defilements, greed, hatred and delusion, spring up from within, that they are atta sambhuta, self-begotten. What is the provocation for such a statement? It is generally believed that greed, hatred and delusion originate from external signs. The magic show and the chess game have shown us how signs become significant. They become significant because they find something within that they can signify and symbolize. Now this is where the question of radical reflection, yoniso manasikara, comes in. What the Buddha brings up in this particular context is the relevance of that radical reflection as a prerequisite for treading the path. The worldling thinks that greed, hate and delusion arise due to external signs. The Buddha points out that they arise from within an individual and destroy him, as in the case of the fruit of a reed or bamboo. It is this same question of radical reflection that came up earlier in the course of our discussion of the Madhupindika Sutta, based on the following deep and winding statement. Chakkhuncausu paticcarupecha uppajjati chakkhuvijñāna. Tinnang sangati paso, pasa paccaya vedana, yang vedeti tang sanjanati, yang sanjanati tang vitakketi, යං විතක්කේති තං පපංචේති. යං පපංචේති තතෝ නිදානං පුරිසං පපංච සංඥා සංඛා සම්දාචරಂತಿ අතීතානාගත පච්චුප්පන්නේසු චක්කු නියේසු රූපේ. Dependent on eye and forms, print, arises eye consciousness. The concurrence of the three is contact. Because of contact, feeling. What one feels, one perceives. What one perceives, one reasons about. What one reasons about, one proliferates. What one proliferates, owing to that, reckonings born of prolific perceptions overwhelm him in regard to forms cognizable by the eye relating to the past, the future, and the present. Eye consciousness, for instance, arises depending on eye and forms. The concurrence of these three is called contact. Depending on this contact arises feeling. What one feels, one perceives. And what one perceives, one reasons about. The reasoning about leads to a proliferation that brings about an obsession, as a result of which the reckonings born of prolific perceptions overwhelm the individual concern. The process is somewhat similar to the destruction of the reed by its own fruit. It shows how non-radical reflection comes about. Radical reflection is undermined, then proliferation takes over. True source, the matrix, is ignored. With the result, an obsession follows, tantamount to an entanglement within and without. Anto jata bhajata. The paramount importance of radical reflection is revealed by the Suchiloma Sutta found in the Sutta Nipata, as well as in the Sagataka Varga of the Samyutta Nikaya. The Yakka Suchiloma poses some questions to the Buddha in the following verse. Rāgo ca dōso ca kuto nidāna arati rati lo mahaṃso kuto ja kuto samuddhāya mano vitakka kumārka vanka nivassajati. Lust and hate, whence caused are they? Whence spring dislike, delight and terror? Whence arising do thoughts disperse, like children leaving their mother's lap? The Buddha answers those questions in three verses. Rāgo ca dōso ca ito nidāna arati rati lo mahaṃso ito ja ito samuddhāya mano vitakka kumāraka vanka nivassajanti. Neha ja atta sambhūta nigrodha seva khanda ja utho visatta kāmesu māluāva vitatā vanti. Yenang pajananti yato nidanang tenang vinodenti sunohi yakha. Te duttarang ogamimang taranti atinna pubbang apunam bhava. It is hence that lust and hate are caused. Hence spring delight and terror. Arising hence do thoughts disperse like children leaving their mother's lap. Moisture born and self-begotten, like the banyan's trunk-born runners, they cleave to diverse objects of sense, like the malua creeper entwining the forest. And they that know where from it springs, they dispel it. Listen, O Yakha, they cross this flood so hard to cross, never crossed before to become no more. In explaining these verses, we are forced to depart from the commentarial trend. The point of controversy is the phrase Kumaraka Dhankam Iva Vasajanti, recognized by the commentary as the last line of Suchiloma's verse. We adopted the variant reading Kumaraka Vankam Iva Vasajanti, found in some editions. Let us first try to understand how the commentary interprets this verse. Its interpretation centers around the word dhanka, which means crow. In order to explain how thoughts disperse, it alludes to a game among village lads in which they tie the leg of a crow with a long string and let it fly away so that it is forced to come back and fall at their feet. The commentary rather arbitrarily breaks up the compound term manovitakka in trying to explain that evil thoughts, vitakka, distract the mind, mano. If the variant reading Kumaraka Vankamiva Sadanti is adopted, the element va in Vankam Viva Sadanti could be taken as a hiatus filler, agama, and then we have the meaningful phrase Kumaraka Vankamiva Sadanti, even as children leave the lap. Lust and hate, delight and terror spring from within. Even so are thoughts in the mind, manovitakka. We take it as one word, whereas the commentary breaks it up into two words. It is clear to find the same commentator analyzing this compound differently in another context. In explaining the term manovitakka occurring in the Kumbha Sutta of the Dvaivata Samyutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, the commentary says, manovitakkyeti manabhi uppanna vitakki. Manovitakka, this means thoughts arisen in the mind. The commentator was forced to contradict himself in the present context because he wanted to justify the awkward simile of the game he himself had introduced. The simile of leaving the mother's lap, on the other hand, would make more sense, particularly in the light of the second verse uttered by the Buddha. Snehaja atta sambhuta nigrodha seva khandaja puto visatta kamesu maluvava vitatavani. The verse enshrines a deep idea. Sneha is a word which has such meanings as moisture and affection. In the simile of the banyan tree, the trunk-born runners are born of moisture. They are self-begotten. Thoughts in the mind cleave to diverse external objects. Just as the runners of a banyan tree, once they take root, would even conceal the main trunk, which gave them birth. So the thoughts in the mind, attached to external objects of sense, would conceal their true source and origin. Non-radical reflection could easily come in. The runners are moisture-born and self-begotten from the point of view of the original banyan tree. The main trunk gets overshadowed by its own runners. The next simile has similar connotations. The Malwa creeper is a plant parasite. When some bird drops a seed of a Malwa creeper into a fork of a tree, after some time a creeper comes up. As time goes on, it overspreads the tree, which gave it nourishment. Both similes illustrate the nature of non-radical reflection. Conceptual proliferation obscures the true source, namely the psychological mainsprings of defilements. Our interpretation of children leaving the mother's lap would be meaningful in the context of the two terms snehaja, born of affection, and atta sambhuta, self-begot. There is possibly a pun on the word sneha. Children are affection-born and self-begotten from a mother's point of view. The basic theme running through these verses is the origin and source of things. The commentator's simile of the crow could ill afford to accommodate all the nuances of these pregnant terms. It distracts one from the main theme of these verses. The questions asked concern the origin. Kuto nidana, kuto ja, kuto samuthai. And the answers are in full accord. Ito nidana, ito ja, ito samuthai. With reference to thoughts in the mind, the term snehaja could even mean born of craving. And atta sambhuta conveys their origination from within. As in the case of the runners of the banyan tree, and the Malwa creeper, Those defining thoughts arisen from within, once they get attached to sense objects outside, obscure their true source. The result is the pursuit of a mirage, spurred on by non-radical reflection. The last verse is of immense importance. It says, but those who know from where all these mental states arise are able to dispel them. It is they who successfully cross this flood so hard to cross and are freed from re-becoming.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.